For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is Wrong by the North Carolina indie rock band Archers of Loaf. You got it all wrong. You can't get it right. Sending it out to the Grizzlies game one performance here in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that was rough. What's the schedule today, by the way?
They have not really a practice, probably just a video session, but there's a press availability this afternoon, which Drew and I will be at, and they'll say things. It's very important when they say things. We'll be there to chronicle them saying things. Yeah. And then, like, they'll play a basketball game tomorrow, and we'll know what actually matters.
Well, they said some things yesterday. Before any of this, one of the great pleasures this morning is that Cameron Whalen called in to weigh in after delivering what was a splendid version of the national anthem, I thought.
Loved it.
Friday night. It was great. Yeah. And you wrote about that. Before we get to Sunday, Friday was fun, didn't you think?
It was. Now, whether it was fun in the ultimate service of good, like, that's debatable.
Right.
But within that moment, that was a great experience. And what I wrote about was that it was a reminder of what that experience is like, because it had been 2 years since the city had that experience at a game. 2 years since they had it's funny, that last time they had a playoff game in FedEx Forum, a postseason game, it was also followed by a drubbing. It was 40 points to the Lakers, and so... Right. It's like, you know, this is our punishment for good things, I guess, now. But it was great fun to, like, be at a game and have the Grouthouse waving and the team plays well and wins and everyone's enjoying it. And, like, it's, you know, hopefully we get more of that in the future.
Well, and it was also...
In the days ahead or not.
Yeah, even from a basketball perspective, it was, you had the big three all playing well. You had the suspense over Ja's ankle and then the dunk, which was
right. Magnificent.
And then you had Zach Edey continuing his development. Like... You could feel pretty good about the basketball part of it, too, walking out of there Friday night.
Yeah, and so really these last two games, in terms of trying to think about the team in a big picture, is very much a try not to get too high or too low situation.
Right.
And so you got to just, like, they're all meaningful data points. You got to, like, take them all in. But it's sort of hard to say after you lose by 50, but, like... They'll face interesting questions when the offseason comes, and we're at least three games away from that. But I'm sure a lot of people today are just like, blow it up, trade everybody, it's hopeless. And if your hope is just having a good basketball team, which, you know, there are higher hopes, but if your hope is that, I am not at the point of thinking like the essential core of what this team has is not that. I think it should be that, very much so.
I'm going to jump to this. One of the demoralizing things about yesterday, it seemed to me, was you had your three best players Your three best players are all healthy, and whatever, there's all the caveats apply. You're playing against the legendarily great Oklahoma City team. You're on short rest. Maybe whatever. Some of your pieces around the periphery are missing, whatever else. But you had your three best players, and they lost by 51.
Yeah, I mean, this is why, you know, it's really like we'll see what happens the next few games. And I don't think anyone expects the Grizzlies to win this series. I don't know how many people expect the Grizzlies to win a game in this series.
Right.
But I don't think people expect them to lose by 50 again either. And so I think that was a little bit of a perfect storm kind of game in terms of the rest situation, the travel situation, in terms of that was a team in a building that was like ready to start their title run. And there was just this burst of energy that came out of that. And so we'll see what happens when it settles down. I'll be very interested to see what game two looks like and, like, who steps up, who doesn't, you know, what adjustments are made or not made. I think, again, it's not a situation where anyone's expecting the Grizzlies to win, but I think there will be what does and doesn't happen in that game will be interesting and meaningful.
In terms of what happened yesterday, they were competitive for the first quarter, right? You know, sort of. Basically competitive for the first quarter. What's your analysis of what happened yesterday? What did we see?
It's hard to analyze something where it's just an avalanche.
Right.
Like at some point, like I'm listening to Desmond Bane talk in the locker room, and all respect to Desmond, but it starts to sound like the parents in a Peanuts cartoon to me, because it's like, you know, we need to, like, he was talking about some specific, like, on-court adjustment. I'm just like, whatever. It was such an absolute typhoon that went over the whole team. Like, you can, like, set harder picks and, like, sure. But, like, I mean, you're going to have to make, like, 17 different things you do better. Like, you know, it was really hard. It was really hard to get into the weeds in that game because, you know, there was no grass to even look at. It just all got blown away.
Right. Well, okay, let's start with Jaren. Jaren, 4 points, 2 of 13. You had said before Friday night's game that he had to be better because he was so-so against Golden State. He hasn't actually been great in the playoffs, and yesterday he was terrible. Go ahead. Thoughts on Jaren?
I'm probably going to write something more Jaren-focused for tomorrow. I'm just kind of looking at that this morning. His playoff history is shaky. There are good games in there, but in total, it's not good. And he's reached the stage at this point in his career where, like, you know, you need more consistent from him. It's really hard to pick one player out of that game because, like, everybody was bad except for Marvin Bagley. But I went through, I watched all of Jaren's shots, his assists and turnovers. I rewatched everything from Jaren this morning. And I came out of the game a little bit critical of the kinds of touches he was getting, and I still am, but he had more opportunity to impact that game when I went back and looked than I thought, and just him just not missing shots he should make more of, right? I mean, you know, he missed – one of those threes that he missed was like just a hot potato, bad pass. You just had to toss it up. But, like, he missed the other ones that were not like that. You got to make one or two of them. And I don't love some of the post stuff they're doing. That's the main thing you go to with him. But, like, he's short-arming some shots he could have made. And so it starts with being on him to be better. And that's the number one thing. But I do think they've gotten away from the thing that he'd become most effective at, which was getting downhill. And so many of his touches now, since the coaching change in the offensive sort of tweaks, are the corner threes and the post-ups. And it's not top of the key with a space floor getting downhill and scoring, and it's that kind of stuff that made him a scorer, like last season, the middle of the season. That's sort of what he evolved into, and that's what he was doing sort of early this season. And there were a few of those kind of plays where there's this one set they run where, like, a guard is penetrating and Jaren comes up from the corner and curls up the top, and they pitch it out to him, and so he catches it top of the key already in motion. They did that three times. He scored once. He got a good shot that he just missed, and he got a pass to Edie for a dunk. Like, three catches in that spot, three, like, good shots out of it. Made two of them, missed one of them. I think Jaren has to be better, but they have to get Jaren more involved in the ways that is going to make him better instead of just these post-ups 12 feet from the basket that are always getting double-teamed when he's not a great passer at a double-team. So I Jared has to be better, and that's number one. But I think Jared is not being used super well either.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Has it changed since their coaching staff has changed? And is using Jaren effectively incompatible with the way they're now using Ja?
I don't think it is ultimately, but if you have a new coach with a full training camp to figure that out, I think the answer is no. I think on the fly, it's been a little bit wonky. But again, these plays I'm talking about that are the pitch out and he gets right. that's off of guard penetration, right? And so that's not everyone clear out and right. Jaren go one on one. That starts with penetration. It doesn't start with Josh standing in the corner. And so I just think you got to lean into more of that kind of stuff. Whether you can adjust that on the fly, I don't know. But I do think if these four players are back next season, whether it's Thomas Isolo or some other coach, you've got to really drill down into how to maximize the various strengths and weaknesses of those players in your offense. And I do think that the lean more towards, you know, screening for John Dez has been good for three of the four players and has been less good for the other one. And so I do think it's an issue. But again, it starts with Jaren. Jaren's still missing shots he can make.
Right.
And so it starts with Jaren has to be better on both ends of the floor. But I do think the kind of touches he's getting is part of the puzzle there.
We did have a caller ask why they don't use Jaren with Ja in the screen and rolls, why it's always Zach. And you've talked about this over the years. Go ahead.
I mean, Jaren's not a great screener. That's one thing. Edie is a great screener, and sort of like that's what he's there for.
Right.
And so if he's on the floor, like if Edie's on the floor and you're going to
– he's going to be screening.
Screen for a guard, right. He's going to be the guy screening, right?
Yep.
So I agree. I agree that they should do that more. I think that has been better than people think when they do it. And again, I don't know how much things adjust on the fly. I'll be interested to see.
In terms of Ja, so we had the whole suspense of whether he would play Friday, and then we hear he's got multiple shots. Do you get the sense now that he's fine? Like, what's Ja's physical state? What do they say about it?
I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
He doesn't say much about it. He was asked, you know, whether he got another injection, and he didn't answer that either way. He just said, I'm out there, I'm fine. It's like he just sort of didn't answer it. I think if you watched him play, he didn't have a great game. He didn't have, like, both of the play-in games, he had a crazy highlight play. Like, he had the off-the-glass to himself, like, sort of right. assist or a layup against Golden State, and he had obviously the dunk against Dallas. It was just spectacular from John this game. That Oklahoma City defense is just hellacious, like everywhere. And so it's harder for everybody to do anything against them. So Ja didn't look great, but he didn't look noticeably diminished physically either. It looked more like he's struggling with this defense than he's struggling.
So what do you expect from the rotation? You know, it is interesting. It's just so funny how it works. Not too high, not too low certainly works for everybody, because Friday you're like, look at the genius, not you, but Isla decides to play Conchar, and Bagley does not play, I mean, yeah, does not play Luke or Vince, and got great results out of it. Go ahead.
I asked Isla before the game. I thought his answer was interesting. I ended up not using it just based on sort of what happened. It felt like three days ago at that point, by the time you get to the end of the game. But I asked him before the game about this. I was trying to lead him somewhere without outright saying it. But I asked him about this idea that typically in playoffs, like lineups and rotations change over the course of the playoffs, especially if you're losing, frankly, right? You end up just trying to try different stuff. And so I said, you know, you've been doing these tight eight-man rotations, you know, with different players lately. Is that something you open up to sort of see more guys with the idea that, you know, you're probably going to be adjusting to different stuff? And he basically said something about, you know, trusting the preparation and not reacting too much to one game, and not basically, he said, not overreacting to shooting variance, right? If you've done your work, your preparation, and you sort of have a belief in certain players will work or not work, or certain strategies will work or not work, you know, those, I'm paraphrasing here, those things not working in one game doesn't necessarily mean they don't work, right? And I think that's right. In terms of how to think about it. But I'm just sort of the belief myself that they should have looked at more players in that game when the game was so competitive, which was not for very long, with the idea that you're probably, whatever your eight is going into that game, it's probably not going to stay that way. And you get more information as quickly as you can. I tend to think, especially given how intense Oklahoma City defense is, that they're just going to, you're just going to wear down trying to play such a small number initially.
Right.
I would get Vince Williams and Luke Kennard into that game and early and see if they got anything. And if they don't, you can pull the plug quick. That's sort of what I would do.
They did. Luke was instrumental in avoiding history, which you chronicled in your column today.
Clutch shot.
So they didn't lose by 58. It was kind of startling to me. David Boyd, and maybe you saw the statistics too, of the teams that have gotten crushed like that, the 58, and then there were some with 51 or whatever it was. Like, all of them won a game in the series, you know? Like, it wasn't, and one of them actually won the series. The St. Louis Hawks won the series when they were blown out. It doesn't look like that will happen, but was there, by the way, a palpable sense of, what was the sense in the locker room and from the podium or whatever afterwards?
It was very on script. I mean, it was, and this was the same with Teo Jenkins a lot of the time, where, like, you can tell, like, what was discussed between the coaches and the players because they all come out and they say the same things.
Right.
You know, and so there was a lot of that. It was game one. And I think if this was game four and now the series is over, maybe you get a different mood. If this was game one of a series, frankly, you were expecting to win, you'd get a different mood. And so I'm not going to say it was defeatist, but it was sort of like a, you know, we can do better than this. We're going to make adjustments. We're going to play better. It's only one game, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think they hope to play better. I don't know, heart of hearts, if anybody hopes to win the series, whether you're a player or a coach or a fan or anybody, you know?
Right. You hope to win a game. And you certainly hope to be more competitive. Right.
Right.
Some of which... Well, so one of the things when we were having the debate last week about whether it would be better to lose Friday if you're a fan, whether you should wish for them to lose Friday or be exposed to the series, the draft pick thing, all of that. One of the things you said was what really matters is that you want the three players to still believe in this. And if they were to miss the playoffs, and I'm paraphrasing you, but if you were to miss the playoffs, that could be demoralizing in a way that could start the breakup of this team. So I guess my question is, can you imagine that this series would be just as or more demoralizing than that loss would have been, and that what happens over the next three games might really set the course for this franchise going forward one way or another?
Yeah, if you get swept and every loss is by 20-plus, then yeah, I you know, that might be worse than losing to the Mavericks at home in a play-in game. That's very possible. And so I do think these games are important. Even if you sort of stipulate those Grizzlies, it's not just that the Grizzlies are sort of not or shaky, which they are. It's that this Thunder team, by a lot of measures, is like the best team since the Jordan Bulls. Like, not record-wise, but performance-wise, game in, game out. It's an NBA record this season for most 15-plus point wins, like, ever. No team has ever had more blowout wins than this Thunder team.
Right.
Their defense is, like, one of the best ever. Their net rating point differential stuff is, like, you know, by some measures, either the best ever or second to the Jordan Bulls. And so, like, that's what you're dealing with right now. I don't even remember what I was saying.
Well, we were talking about whether it's going to be a seismic set that, or the demoralizing, whether it could be more.
Yeah. And so I think it's hard to know. It's hard to get into the heads of the players and the front office and the coaches and all of that. But I think if you just seem like you just can't even remotely compete at all, yeah, I think that raises questions. But I think there are a lot of questions going into the summer. I mean, you got, you know, Jaws had all the issues, and Jaren is facing, you know, he's got one more year left on his contract, and is facing this, you know, potential extension, and you got a head coaching vacancy. And I think the choose your own adventure could head in all kinds of different directions.
Jeffrey made the point, too, that all of this could look even a little bit different. I mean, we already know and acknowledge that Oklahoma City is a historically great team, it appears. If in the end of this you look up and they've lost two games and won the championship and blown out a lot of people, that will also cast how we look at it someday. Maybe you were just one of the flies on the windshield on their championship, you know.
There's all kinds of ways. You're right. What happens with OKC the rest of the way will color what happened to you. I mean, you can look at this, some of this other stuff, and, like, the Grizzlies were, look at these two play-in games, right? you dispatch a Dallas team easily that it dispatch a Sacramento team easily. You go to Golden State in a game that, like, both teams wanted badly, and you're down by one when Ja twists his ankle, and it's still a one-possession game in the end, and then that team goes and, you know, beats Houston on their home floor, right?
Yeah.
And so to what degree is it you have issues, which you do, and to what degree is it the Thunder are just, like, three steps ahead of everyone else and no one else is close? It could be that you are that you are not that different from the Golden States and Houston's and Denver's and, like, the Lakers get blown off their home floor, right?
Right.
It could be that you're not that far from that second tier, that you're not in that second tier. You were early in the season and you got pushed out of it. You're not that now. But you're not really that far from those teams. It's just that the first tier is one team and it's like 15 stories ahead of everyone else. That could be it. But that'll be determined partly by what happens the rest of the playoffs.
This all goes back to those stupid games they lost at the beginning of the season when they were playing with their food, damn it. They shouldn't be here.
I saw some random tweet from some fan that was like, every team that's 3-7 in the West, say a little prayer for Memphis. This could have been you.
Thoughts on Zach Edey's weekend, Friday and Sunday, all of it?
He was good against the Mavs. I mean, he went up against two big teams. He was good against the Mavs, and he was not as good against the Thunder, obviously. I mean, this was the dude's first playoff game in that building against that team, and, like, the whole team was getting overwhelmed. It was notable that sort of middle of the game, he really sort of went away from Edey. Edey in game two, if Jaren's, like, top of my list of, like, players I'm interested in how they respond in game two, like, Edey might be second. And that's not just a big team in Oklahoma City. Those are two very mobile, very good defensive bigs who can also, like, Hardenstein can hit the floaters and Chet can shoot from three. And that's a really rough matchup, I mean, for anybody, but particularly for Edey. And so, you know, can they get more out of him early? And if they don't, then they go away from him quicker. I think that's a big thing to look for in game two.
So is there anywhere notable to eat in Oklahoma City, Chris? Have you shouted that out?
Man, I am really hoping I can get what I'm trying to write done soon after the availability today, and I can get out of downtown, Bricktown area, because I'm just not interested in this at all. I do want to go. I've never really spent time in Oklahoma City. This is like the second time I've been here, but I've never gotten out of the downtown Bricktown area, and I need to go check out neighborhoods. I mean, that's how I judge cities. I'm not interested in
Bricktown is
the tipsy tiki bar down the street from the arena or whatever, you know?
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Try to do better next time for us. Thanks. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks. Chris was good. His column was good. Captured the scene. There you go. Better him than me, by the way. You got to get up Saturday morning after that late night, drive to Oklahoma City, miss Easter. That's how I spent my entire life. And now no longer. I was able to spend Easter with the family. All right. We have other things to talk about. It is draft week, Jeffrey. One of the things that has depressed me about this is that the game three is Thursday night. That's draft night. And game four is Saturday. That's still the draft. That's 4-7, right? 2-3 on Friday. Rounds 2-3 on Friday.
Round one Thursday, two and three on Friday. And then.
So it's in Green Bay this week. But we got a lot more to talk about. We will get to that when we return. Before then, I will tell you, if you are thinking about getting engaged, Robert Irwin Jewelers is the number one place to buy engagement rings, diamond engagement rings, because a whole bunch of reasons. A, Howie's just passionate about diamonds. You get in there. I was buying diamond earrings for Clara the other day. And he just when he talks about diamonds, he just lights up, man. And so you walk in there and you've got an idea. If you can dream it, they can make it. Absolutely. You get a whole bunch of choices. They've got natural diamonds and lab-grown diamonds, increasingly popular. You got the peace of mind that comes with a meant-to-be guarantee. That's a 365-day, no-questions-asked return policy. You get free free ring sizing, easy for me to say, for life. You got free spa service for life on their on the jewelry spa service. That's a whole bunch of maintenance services, including stone tightening, buffing, polishing, ultrasonic cleaning, all of that, and tremendous financing options as well. 24 months deferred interest, or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Seriously, if you're thinking about getting engaged, no better place than Robert Irwin Jewelers. They got five locations: Perkins Extended in East Memphis, Bartlett Town Center, South Lake Center in South Haven, two locations in the Little Rock area. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, online at rijewelers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I'll tell you what'll lift your spirits. What'll lift your spirits is heading into O'Call. I wore my O'Call sport coat yesterday when I went to Easter services. Did you go to Easter? Did you go to church yesterday?
I did, and I also wore a sport coat.
Did you really? From O'Call? See, you look good. You look good. Didn't wear a tie. Didn't wear
no
a tie.
No tie for me either.
But I did wear
a shirt from O'Call, too.
Sport coat. I did, too, as well. Looking my best.
Look at us.
Listen, they can make me look good. They can make Jeffrey look good. They can certainly make you look good. Spring has sprung in Oak Hall. It's absolutely beautiful. I walked in, and I'm going to go back for some more slack. I need the Brax pants. They're my favorite pants I've ever worn in my entire life. Just trust me. Incredibly comfortable. They look great. But they got the sports shirts there. They got the polos, both in cotton and in their performance. It's just beautiful stuff. Absolutely beautiful. It's been around for forever. They've been here basically forever. We are lucky to have a store the caliber of Oak Hall. And here's the thing. They're not the slightest bit intimidating. You just walk in there. It's warm. The people are welcoming. They go, you know, out of their way to help you. I actually, the shirt that I wore Sunday, I had bought it a year ago. And I decided the sleeves were too long. So I headed back in, and they said, oh, yeah, we can take care of that. There's no charge. They did that. They took care of the sleeves, beautifully perfect sleeves, because they have the people who do the work there literally right on site. They're not sending it out to work. Well, it'll be back in. No. The people who do the work, they're part of the Oak Hall team. They are right there on site. It is a legendary clothing store. Head in there sometime this week. All right, Jeffrey, we did have news in the world today. The Pope died.
Indeed.
Pope Francis died the day after Easter at the age of 88. The first pope from South America, first Jesuit pope. He had been pope for 12 years. He had been the pope, and really an interesting guy. Humble. Let me just read you just a little bit from the obit that I read in the New York Times today. Francis reached out to migrants, the poor, the destitute, to victims of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy members, and to alienated gay Catholics. He traveled to often forgotten and far-flung countries and sought to improve relations with an antagonistic Chinese government, Muslim clerics, and leaders from across the fragmented Christian world. After some early stumbles, he took strong steps to address a clerical sex abuse crisis that had become an existential threat to the church. He adopted new rules to hold religious leaders, including bishops, accountable if they committed sexual abuse or covered it up, though he did not impose the level of transparency or civil reporting obligations that many advocates demanded. In his final years, slowed by a bad knee, intestinal surgery, and respiratory ailments that sapped his breath and voice, Francis used a cane and then a wheelchair, seemingly a diminished figure. But that was a misleading impression. He continued to travel widely, focusing on exploited and war-torn parts of Africa, where he excoriated modern-day colonizers and sought peace in South Sudan. Here's a little more. Francis signaled his humble style from the outset. He paid his own bill at the Vatican Hotel, where he stayed during the conclave that elected him. He rode about town in a modest Ford Focus. lived in a Vatican guest house rather than the ornate papal apartments, and in a Holy Week ritual performed at a youth prison, washed the feet of young Muslim women, of a young Muslim woman. Later, in his ailing years, he referred to his own frailty in demanding dignity for the aged. Just seems like a wonderful pope. It's not, you know, I'm not Catholic. I'm not, I can't really particularly weigh in. But it's interesting. You read the Bible, you read the New Testament. There seems to be a whole lot of focus there on taking care of the poor.
Yep.
And the meek. And sometimes it often seems to get lost, in the way that, our religion is practiced these days. And that was his focus. And so,
and the sick.
And the sick and the poor and the downtrodden. That was his focus. He grew up. He was a, so much of the stuff I learn when people are gone because I read the obits. His family had immigrated to Argentina from Italy. Do you know this? Did you know this? And
yes.
So his grandparents were planning to go, but they had a little bit of a hard time. You knew this. Did you know this? Selling the coffee shop.
Yeah.
And so he missed the ship. They missed the ship that was supposed to take them to Argentina. At the time, a little bit of another modern echo here, they were sort of fleeing fascism in Italy. And so they missed the ship that they were supposed to take. That ship sank. They subsequently took another ship. And there you go. Have you seen the movie Conclave?
So I've not watched Conclave. I have seen Angels and Demons.
Interesting. Interesting movie. I finally saw it. Interesting film. And certainly, it'll give you a sense of things. I don't know how accurate it is, but it's all about the conclave. And so we will shortly be having a new pope. All right. I guess we're done with the Grizzlies for now. I've gotten some requests. Like someone said, you have to go over these stats. Don't pound it into the ground. And I think at this point, just to wrap this up a little bit, whether you wanted this series or not, here we are.
Yeah.
Right? So I do desperately want them to be competitive. And even you look back at some of those early sweeps.
Yeah.
The first three sweeps, the first three times this team went to the playoffs. There were some demoralizing games in there. There were some really deeply competitive, gripping games, particularly the ones at FedEx Forum,
yeah.
Right? And you are hoping that if they are competitive tomorrow night, right, you come back with restored confidence, you're home, you ride that, you ride the home crowd. Hopefully you get people a little bit, restore some hope
sure.
by the way you play tomorrow night, right? And then, what the hell, man? We only got two games left here.
Yeah.
You rally around each other. You get down your ass down to FedEx Forum. You get your growl towel. You experience playoff basketball. And you lift this team to, if not victory, hopefully victory.
Yeah.
Screw them. I mean, right?
Like you said, we're here.
You're here. You're here at this point. And you know what? It's a chance of redemption for Jaren Jackson Jr. I mean, he has to know he was terrible. I don't think there's any mystery, right?
I would think he would be the first one.
He would know he was terrible. So Dez would know he was terrible. Dez seems like a competitive dude, doesn't he, to you?
Absolutely.
What will we learn? Like that it is an opportunity to learn. As long as we're doing this, we might as well learn some things. We'll learn some things about Jaren. We'll learn some things about Dez. We'll learn some things about Ja. We'll learn some things about that group playing together. We'll learn some things about Zach Edey. And so what the hell, man? Like you're here. Let's hope that tomorrow is better. And then let's hope for a good night at FedEx Forum Thursday.
No, but
a good, fun, loud night at FedEx Forum Thursday. You can buy your tickets, by the way, on sale now.
I do think it starts with tomorrow night. Tomorrow night you need to prove game one was an aberration.
Yeah. All right. NFL draft, Jeffrey. Let's get into that just a little bit. I did see this stat about you wonder. I don't think there's any mystery about how important the NFL draft is. Let's be clear. But it is interesting. The Titans drafted 23 players between 20 and 22. Okay, 2021 and 22. Those drafts. So those are drafts where right now they're guys who have a little experience. They're on your team. They should be the guts of your team.
Right.
Of the three of the 23 players that they drafted between 20 and 22. That's
the years, not the picks. Right.
That, yeah, 2020 and 2022. That's 3 years of drafts.
Yep.
So that's like, you know, basically you have one around, plus they had some extras.
Yep.
Right? So it's seven rounds, and they had two other picks in there because they drafted 23 players. Guess how many players still on their roster?
Six.
Three!
Yeah.
Three.
It's also important to note, like, you had a
management change.
Oftentimes what you see in a management change is they get rid of everyone else's players, and then they try to get their own guys in. But, yes, that's a problem.
In terms of and weirdly enough, if you're looking at just the percentage of players from those drafts who are still on the team, care to guess what team has the highest percentage of players drafted in those years, 20, 21, and 22, still on the team?
Is it the Lions?
It's the freaking Chiefs.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about it is you wouldn't think they would have you would think they wouldn't have a lot of roster room because they have a tremendous roster, right? It's harder to make, if you're a seventh round pick for the Chiefs, it's harder to make it than if you're a seventh round pick from the Titans. And yet, the Titans are amazing. 2020, they drafted six players. They got zero. 2021, they drafted eight players. They got zero on their roster. 2022, they drafted nine players. They have three on their roster.
You could actually talk me into the Chiefs kind of make some sense because they have so much money tied up into a few
that
guys.
They need some cheap guys?
Correct. That's how they're doing it.
Well, here you go, ladies and gentlemen. In terms of percentage of picks still on the roster, Chiefs are number one, 14 of 22 players drafted. That's a 63%, nearly 64% hit rate. Ravens are two.
Yeah.
That's 15 of 29 in those 3 years drafted. That's a nearly 52% draft rate. Bills are three, 11 of 23. That's a 47, 48% hit rate. Bengals are four. I mean, this kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Like every single team you've mentioned here has to pay their quarterback.
But they're also good drafters. That's also why they're good. They have to, and these are good teams: Chiefs, Ravens, Bills, and Bengals. And then it's Texans next. They're at 47% hit rate. Then the Saints. Then the Cowboys. Interesting. We talk about how they have a bad GM, but they're not bad at drafting.
No, you and I have talked about this. Like a lot of the criticism for Jerry doesn't hold up in the draft. Now, a lot of the criticism holds up, but they've been pretty good at the draft.
The worst drafters over this, again, this is a 3 year period, 2021 and 22. The worst drafter, the Cardinals, the Titans,
the Commies.
No, weirdly enough, the Commies, Commies are fifth from the bottom.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, and I don't know how to explain this one, the Vikings and Rams are both down there too. The Vikings and Rams are both down there, too. But other than that, it's bad teams. It's Raiders, it's Patriots, it's Bears. It's those are the teams that have not been good. So drafting does matter. It feels like we have a total consensus on the top three picks now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and honestly, I think it's trending to where the top four is a consensus. It feels like Campbell's going at four.
So Cam's going one.
Yep. Travis is going two.
Travis Hunter's going two.
And then Abdul Carter's
going three.
And I think
Feels like Will Campbell's going four.
Yeah.
So that gets you to Jacksonville and five.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's going to be a particularly eventful first round. The one that, and of course, so what everyone's focused on is Shedeur Sanders, right? They've all focused on Shedeur.
Absolutely.
Where is he going? And
when is he going?
Mel was on Sportsmanlike this morning. Of course he was. And he was talking about quarterbacks who were thought to have been first-round picks who were drafted in the second round, who fell all the way to the second round. He started with Boomer Esiason, who he had way back in 84.
83 is the big draft, right?
Yeah.
83 is the all the guys.
He had Boomer. Now, he's a Maryland guy, Mel is. He had Boomer Esiason as the third player on his board. Now, he didn't have him mocked going three.
Right.
But he had him as third on his board. Boomer fell into the second round.
Yeah.
Another one who could have gone in the first round who fell in the second round, Brett Favre.
Yep.
Another one who could have, a lot of people thought was going to go in the first round who fell in the second round, Geno.
Yep.
Geno Smith. And so he said, no, it would not be shocking at all. It would be surprising because quarterbacks are in need and whatever else. It
well,
would
also
be surprising
the CBAs if, were different then.
Right. It would be surprising if Shadur fell to the second round, but not totally crazy. And so the question is, if he gets past the Saints, where is he falling? Now, one thing that's been interesting is, if you want to draft Shadur, or if you draft Shadur, the thought is, as a coaching staff, you have to be damn secure in your position. Because if you flounder, Deion is going to be seen as the next coach. Do you think that's true? In other words, if you're, if let's say you're drafted by, New Orleans has a new coach.
Yes.
So they're not, but
New Orleans, Kellen Moore.
Yeah, Kellen Moore is the new coach. But okay, fine. You're drafted by the Saints. You're good. He's good, but the Saints continue to struggle a little bit.
Sure.
Does Kellen Moore have to start looking over his shoulder in a way that very clearly Mike Tomlin would probably never have to worry about?
I'd be less concerned about looking over the shoulder. I would be concerned about the media machine coming out against you.
The media machine?
That
is Deion?
Yeah, Deion knows how to use the media.
I see. So all of a sudden he would come out and take shots at you.
And maybe not even necessarily like Deion's name to it, but like you'll start to hear the machine rolling. It's like you can always trace it back to the same spot.
There's also some thought that the one spot where if someone wants to trade up for Shadur in the top 10, the Bears pick. They pick 10th, I think. The Bears pick 10th, I think. And there's some thought that there may be jockeying at that point to go back up and get Shadur at that point. But really, he's the intrigue. Now, I did watch the Seth Hennigan. Did you end up watching the...
So I've seen the first like 10 or 15 minutes, and then I got behind.
So it was urged upon me to go watch it. And it's the John Gruden... Is it just a YouTube series? Is that what it is? Yeah. It's Quarterback U or whatever he calls it, and Gruden's there. And I'll say this. The first 10 minutes... It's kind of garbage. It's John Gruden saying, "You're a coach's son, aren't you? And that means you're not, you didn't want to transfer, did you?" It's 10 minutes of him blowing smoke up his ass in ways that you 100%, like, I found
it. What was that like with your family when you praised your brother?
Yeah, exactly. It was just all this. I bet that was a bit you.
Man.
Yeah. But you don't want to. You didn't try to transfer when everyone else was transferring.
No,
but
NIL deals for you.
It was just like, they weren't questions either. Like, they weren't, sure. It was such suck-up stuff. It was just, I thought, a little cringe, as the kids would say, right? Then, however, when you get them up on the board, it's really very impressive.
And with the tape. Yeah.
You're having, first he has him break down plays from 4 years ago. I don't know if they told Seth they were going to be talking about this play, but Seth immediately rattling off all of his reads on, like, he is damn impressive on that board. And then he has him go through plays that Gruden would have him running.
Yeah.
And has him memorizing, spitting out. And his
the verbiage and everything,
really impressive.
Yeah. No, I also think that's why you saw Seth go up the, like.
So whether that will get him drafted, whether that will get him, someone over the weekend said he's going to be drafted in the fourth round because of that. I do not believe that. But will it get him drafted in the sixth or seventh round on the basis of his brain?
100%
I could see that.
And I don't think that would have happened until the
combine, all the postseason, everything.
The camps, everything.
Sixth, seventh round pick, why not? Who the hell was that Georgia quarterback the Bills wasted a pick on?
Jake Fromm.
Yeah. I'll take Seth. So maybe Seth will go sixth or seventh round. I don't think he's going to go fourth round, but if you haven't seen it, it is good stuff. Tennessee picked up a big hoops recruit over the weekend. Really the best high school player who is still available. High school players still matter, don't they, Jeffrey?
Apparently so.
And Cooper Flagg, shocker, people.
No, Herbert St. Nevis. He is entering the draft.
Another reason I kind of regret that the Grizzlies won Friday. We could be in the Cooper. We could be right now talking about the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. No, no, I'm joking. We're in it. Go out and win or don't get humiliated.
We're here.
In game two. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Jeff will join the guys today. Jason Munns will join Coach Hurd and I today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work is done.